The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. You have the power of information. Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
From the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, my name's Charlie Robinson. Thanks for hanging out with me for the next 2 hours. If you want to connect with me directly, you can do so on Twitter, at Macroaggression. You can follow me on Instagram, at Macroaggression Podcast, or you can find my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. I write books. You can find out everything about the books there, or my podcast, Macroaggressions, in audio format, wherever podcasts are served, and in video format. Why don't you head on over to Rockfin and check it out. If you've been looking for all those content creators that used to be over on YouTube, and then they vanished one day. Well, I'll tell you what, they're all hiding over at Rockfin. R-O-K-F-I-N. That's the place to be. What a week. I'll tell you. It looks like there's a party at the southern border. I'll be honest. It looks like a lot of fun down there. I don't know if I want all of the shenanigans that are happening, but there's definitely something going on. It's like Coachella meets, I don't know, some sort of country western music festival. It's wild down there, man. They're just going to let everybody in, right? Just come on in. Just come on in. Everybody come on in. Bring whatever you can. You have AIDS? That's fine. We don't care. We're done. Joe Biden's running the country, and Kamala Harris is explaining time and space. Do you think we care about what you're coming in with through the southern border? We've got much bigger problems. We've got a guy that cannot find his way off the stage, and a woman that is talking about falling out of coconut trees. It's the craziest time to be alive, man. As a writer, oh boy, I couldn't ask for anything better. I'm going to need 8 lifetimes to write all the things I'm seeing. It's just wild. But I'll tell you what, I tell you who one of my favorite people in the world is. It's Jeffrey Wilson. And he's here today. He's our guest in hour number one. Hour number two, we have Jeff Warnock, creative director from Empath Eyes Studios. He's going to talk to us about the marketing of psychological operations, which is going to be fascinating. But without further ado, he is one half of the previously known Conspiracy Farm with UFC Hall of Famer Pat Miletich. Now the host of that podcast network, my good friend, Jeffrey Wilson. Oh, Jeffrey, are you there, sir?
Why, good morning, Charlie. Why, good morning. Just to correct you, I am still the co-host of the Conspiracy Farm. However, I am the creator and content producer over at that podcast network. So we're still doing the farm and we are growing the network, my friend.
That's what I wanted to know. The farm can never get plowed under, please.
No, gosh, no, gosh, never. No. And I also have my own little solo performance. It's me speaking to you. It's all spelled one word. It's me, SBK, and the number two, the letter U, where I just chop it up. You know, sometimes I get a little conspiratorial, political. Sometimes it's just regular Joes just talking smack, just more conversational.
Well, I love it. And you and I always have great conversations about what's going on in the world. Man, what do you make of the southern border crisis? This seems like... boy, if I didn't know any better, Jeffrey, I'd say this is done by design, right? We've got a bunch of trilaterals running the Biden administration. We know that the Trilateral Commission is all about open borders. They want to make a North American Union. I mean, if I put on my little tinfoil sombrero, I might be inclined to think that this was done by design. What say you?
Well, I mean, I tell you, Charlie, and it's not just because, you know, you're my boy and I'm on your show. There's so many layers to all of this, obviously, and you are correct, it is by design, but you know, your title of your book really encapsulates it all. It's a controlled demolition of the American empire. Now, there's so much that goes into that, you know, the cultural side of it, the societal side of it, the political side of it, the financial side of it, the border. This is definitely, we're watching it in real time, how they're imploding our American society. And it just, you know... I know you were saying it tongue in cheek. That seemed like there's a good time going on down there, but not for like, the, you know, the young kids who are being crossed over the border, it being, you know, and people in general. This is all facilitating human trafficking, child trafficking, the trafficking of people's body parts, guns, drugs. This is all that black market economy we always talk about. And as we say on the show, IAOC, it's all organized crime, baby.
Yeah, it really is, man. And when Berwick and I wrote Controlled Demolition, I mean, we knew it wasn't one thing that takes down the empire. It's a variety of things. It's rigging detonators all over the place on every support column. And one of those support columns is the security of the borders or lack thereof, I guess, at this point. And you're right. I'm being a bit facetious when I say it looks like there's a party going on down there. But the reality is that there's all kinds of things happening. We bomb the shit out of Central America and create conflict and chaos there, and people rightly want to get away from that. I say we America, the American Empire, does that and destabilize regions, and then these people want to leave the regions. I can't blame them for that. I would want to leave too. So they come up towards America, and you can almost understand that, how you could empathize with that. But then there's this other component. There's this other side that's being manufactured. It's being made to happen. It's the what George Soros did in North Africa and Europe and Turkey in these areas where they're handing out pamphlets, pre-printed pamphlets, like, this is where you go, this is the route, these are the people you talk to, this is where you pick up your cell phones, this is where you pick up your, and you go, well, wait a second, this is more coordinated than Coachella, right? This is right. There's a lot going on here, you know? So I can understand the disconnected part, like the disjointed things, but then you also go, there's a line of people walking from Venezuela. You go, how is this organized? You know, doesn't it feel, it feels like it's being made to happen. Like it's a manufactured event. Do you get that feeling from what you've been seeing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, this is a chess game, not checkers. And then, you know, not only are they dealing with hardships in their own particular countries, but they're being financially incentivized oftentimes when they come in here. It's like they're given a bunch of free shit, cell phone, you know, driver's license, the ability sometimes to vote. I mean, there's a lot of incentive for them to come here. And me personally, being the conspiratorial guy I am, I think it's a much larger stratagem, if you will, because you bring them in here, give them free shit in the droves of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, and guess which way they're going to vote? So they've weaponized basically illegal immigration in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, they do. And listen, who could blame you? You know, if I was trying to get into the promised land and there was one group in charge, and every time they got in charge, they let people like me in, I'd be inclined to be supportive of that side as well. It's a dirty trick. It's what you do when you can't win votes, you know, through your own policy. You have to sort of like grow a new crop of voters that don't know about all the horrible things the Democratic Party has done, and the Republicans too. I'm no fan of either one of these, either wing of this bird, but clearly the Democratic Party is the party of free gifts for people that have done nothing, and then of course if you've done anything, then they want to tear down your statues. they don't want to hard work and accomplishment and achievements, that's clearly white supremacy, and anything other than that is stunning and brave. And it makes me think that, you know, we've got two more years of this. If we are to believe that Joe Biden's going to make it and Kamala isn't going to take over. Oh my God. Speculation here. Because I know you've got a good sense of humor. Imagine a world in which Kamala Harris becomes the president of the United States. What do you think is going to happen to this country if Joe Biden leaves on a stretcher and Kamala Harris is the president of the United States? And on her first day in office, she decides that she wants to explain to everybody how time and space works. Is this a winning formula for the nation?
Well, I mean, between the two of them, they're both like the gas machines. They just like are pumping them out like as soon as they open their mouth. And again, on a serious level, though, I mean, if she does become president, the world's not going to take us any more serious. And that's really kind of the crux of everything. With everything that's going on right now geopolitically, Kamala Harris' presidency is just going to facilitate and further push everything down the road of, you know, listening to the news before we came on, the multipolar world order, the One Belt One Road, which we can probably get into. Yeah, it's not about her being a her or who. I mean, she's just not bringing her A game, and she hasn't. And I don't think she's necessarily ready for this level of politicking, if you will. Granted, she was a senator for a long time, but I mean, this is the global stage, and unfortunately her predecessor, if she comes in, is not doing her any favors as far as the world taking us seriously.
No, it's definitely the JV team that's running things out there. It's
without a doubt.
It's been embarrassing, but
it's not by accident, like you said. We have to continue to realize none of this is by accident, in my humble opinion.
No, it's really not by accident. And it seems like, you know, we've got 4 years of Trump and everybody's got an opinion on Trump. But one thing that's undeniable is that he was the divider in chief. I mean, he really divided this nation and created some polarization in a way that I've never quite seen. And then the Biden administration came in and they're so incompetent in a way that... I mean, what do you think about this? Let me propose, because you and I have the benefit of hindsight in this. You remember when the W. Bush administration came in 2000, you know, and it was Cheney and Rumsfeld who had been there 2 decades earlier, and they knew their way around the White House and they knew their way around Washington. And on day one, those guys got to work in a really devious fashion. You know, they're Project for a New American Century guys. They had a plan for 9/11. They had, you know, they were on a schedule. They had all these things. They looked like they were organized and evil. Juxtapose that with the Biden administration, who comes in and on day one, it's like they don't know what they're doing. What do you think is more dangerous for us as just average Americans dealing with a group like the Cheney Bush psychopathic group or the Kamala Harris, Joe Biden? I don't know where, you know, I don't know. I shit my pants in front of the Pope and I don't know what's going on. You know, like this, I don't know. I don't know if we're in a better situation or a worse situation. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you're right. The Cheneys, the Rumsfelds, they came in, you know, really cleaning house and setting up shop per, you know, like you said, the Project for a New American Century, which had been formulated years before. And they really came in and began executing that. And, you know, Biden was cut from a bit of a different cloth, but I think he's still doing and playing out the playbook that was almost given to him. You know what I mean? So, like, again, none of this is necessarily by accident. You know, the effect and the ramifications are still the same because there's chaos throughout the world, whether it's, you know, being executed very precisely and strategically, or it just looks like it's this conk and bonk freaking Keystone Cop show in the White House right now. The end result is the execution of this larger plan, which, you know, we all have talked about it, you know, Fourth Industrial Revolution, et cetera, Agenda 21. The end result is still the same. We get caught oftentimes into the nuance of like, oh, he's such a dipshit. Like, he's really falling over his feet. He doesn't know what he's doing. Let's look at the end result of all of this. And the end result is, you know, on the larger macro perspective, China's taken down shit and they haven't fired a shot.
Yeah.
They've been running the game for the last 20 years and they haven't fired a single shot. And, you know, again, the Belt and Road and all that other stuff, that's really what's framing the geopolitical platform for the next several years, which coincides with Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, et cetera. If that answered your question, yeah, I don't know if it did or not.
Yeah. No, we're in a really dangerous time. I mean, say what you will about Trump, but there's no possible way that the other nations would have interacted with him the way they interact with Joe Biden. He is a very weak president. We watched Anthony Blinken go to Alaska to have a meeting with the Chinese, and the Chinese just curb stomped him. You know, they had no respect for Blinken. There's no respect for Biden. There's no respect for Kamala Harris. There's just a lack of respect for America in a way. Or, you know, listen, I don't know if it's respect or fear or whatever. There's a lack of something on the part of these other nations. They look at us and they just don't respond the same way. I think we're going to, you know, we've got issues with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is behaving in a way that was, it would have never happened under either of the previous Bushes, I'll put it that way. The fact that Saudi Arabia started to entertain ideas of, hey, maybe we'll deal with China. You know, maybe this petro-yuan arrangement isn't the worst thing in the world. I mean,
there's not only that, Mohammed, but, you know, like I said, China... Yeah. China just brokered that deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And this is, again, right. China trying to be us, trying to be the U.S. And again, you know, getting into the larger, I hate to keep saying it, but this is what it's all about, in my opinion, the One Belt, One Road. Saudi Arabia is right there on the Red Sea there, right across from Sudan, and all this other stuff's going on. This chaos is going on in Sudan. Russia's building a base. This is all facilitating the maritime route for the One Belt, One Road. It's called the String of Pearls, and it's all coming up through around the Horn of Africa, the Gulf of Aden, the Red Sea, into the Suez Canal. So as I've said many times, we often see different conflicts throughout the world at least right now, and for the last 10, 15 years, you're going to see where the potential probable routes for either the rail or the road or the maritime One Belt One Road is going on. Take whether it's Ethiopia, whether it's Sudan, whether it's Saudi Arabia, things around the Horn of Africa, Myanmar, which is tricking off right now, Pakistan, Ukraine, it goes right through Ukraine. So again, this is my own personal theory on this stuff, but where it's that ultimate ordo ab chaos. They're tricking off and destabilizing certain parts of the world. So China, who is the new peacemaker, can come in, set up shop, and let it facilitate this One Belt, One Road.
Yeah, I had John Perkins on macroaggressions a couple months ago. He's the inspiration for. I mean, I read his book Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Absolutely.
And it blew my mind. I read that in 2007 when I was on a scuba diving trip, and it broke my brain, and I had to come to this realization that you could use finances to do unspeakable things, and the banking industry is the trigger for that. And then he said to me, "Well, listen, I'm finishing up the third version of it, which is dealing on with the economic hitmen coming out of China." So I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about BRI because I think you're right. This is a huge component, something that doesn't really get talked about too much. But this Belt and Road Initiative is something that we're going to have to deal with for the next half a century. Back with more with the great Jeffrey Wilson after this break. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
You have the press conference that was held by House Republicans, as they say, documenting the Biden family members, I think nine of them, getting payments when he was vice president. Even his grandchildren, Hunter Biden's wife, his former wife, his other son's widow, they all got money from various countries through LLCs, and nobody could find out what there is no Biden family business. I mean, what did they do? You know, you talk about Jared Kushner or whatever, or Trump's hotels. Okay, those are products. That's real stuff. What did the Bidens do to get this? I think it was a total of $10 million. So you had that. just crazy, crazy stuff.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
Introducing cordless bungee jumping! 894 meters, that's 894 meters! 128 kilometers an hour in just 8 seconds! And guess what? No cord! Now that's epic! Are you ready to live on the edge and scream your heart out? Then take the plunge! Cordless bungee jumping, it's insane! No strings attached, dudes!
You'd never really bungee jump without a cord. Yet, you drive without a seatbelt. Buckle up. Always wear a seatbelt when driving. This is a message from the Roads and Transport Authority.
If you can't believe what you're hearing,
get the straight talk from Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Jeffrey Wilson from The Conspiracy Farm and that podcast network. Let's talk Belt and Road Initiative, because I did an episode about this. It's something really fascinating. This is essentially the remaking of the Silk Road. This is the connection of China, Asia with Europe over the land component. This is the belt portion, right? And through the maritime, through the sea, down what you mentioned, the String of Pearls, that is the road part. I know it sounds backwards. The road part should be over the land, but it's not because China, I don't know. This is a huge plan. This is, and I'm talking to Perkins about this, and he's saying, you know, it's got economic hitman vibes all over it. And I said, well, yeah, but
all over it.
But what's the difference here is it feels like China wants to be an actual partner to these countries, and that whereas America wants to sort of enslave, you know, back in the old days, enslave Ecuador in some debt trap, it seems that yes, China doesn't really want to do that as much as they just want to build up all of these ports and they want to build up all of these rail lines. We've got a Silk Road railway that goes from China to Kazakhstan to Russia to Belarus to Poland to Germany. Now, let me ask you this. How do we get this? Is the, I wonder, Jeffrey, and this, again, just a little conspiratorial side of me, but the monkey business in Ukraine, it sort of messes with the Belt and Road Initiative as well, because we've got proposed rail lines going through Ukraine, going through to connect up to Germany, and also some that connect southward down through Italy. So is America's play against Ukraine sort of simultaneously not just a play against Russia, but a play against the Belt and Road Initiative as well?
On the surface, I think it does seem that way, because, yeah, I mean, like I said, these areas that these rails, these things are going through, there's a certain destabilization. I think with China's new role, they're coming in as the savior, if you will, with that Hegelian dialectic to swoop in and then set up. I mean, this might take a while, but the same thing they're doing in Africa and Latin America, setting up mining rights, setting up different trade routes, which ultimately lends itself to different military bases that they put.
Of course.
Speaking of John Perkins, you know, that's what they did to Sri Lanka. They loaned them a bunch of money. Oh, you can't pay us back. That's cool. Just let us set up shop. Ultimately, military bases, which helps facilitate their Belt and Road. But I mean, I think, you know, Ukraine has been for years and years and years just the epicenter of so much just dirty, just shady, dark art shit, just washing money. I mean, this has been, again, I wouldn't say an epicenter, but just a huge spot for so much shady, nefarious stuff going on. So it's really hard to pin down what exactly is going on. You know, NATO's encircling of Russia has been going on for a long time. I mean, obviously, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine goes back centuries, if you will. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, because the West is posing themselves as, like, you know, the savior of Ukraine. So I'm not 100% sure, but ultimately, I do believe, I think it's there. This whole conflict is there to help facilitate. China's locking it down. I'm not sure what U.S.'s role is, because they're just bleeding so much money into Ukraine. I'm not sure exactly what the end game for that is, because I just don't know. I don't know what's ultimately going on there. But I think, like I said, with the destabilizing of certain areas, with China locking down Eurasia, I think they're going to swoop in and be the savior for this. It'll be crazy if that happens, because we will have lost like so much money in this effort. But we like to do that. We like to spend trillions and trillions of dollars in Afghanistan and Iraq and then just dip out.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely good at flushing money down the toilet. China seems to be a little bit more strategic with their deployment of their capital, maybe because they have to be, because they don't have the world's printing press, and they have to be. But they're operating Pakistan's Gwadar port until 2059. And I think a lot of people are seeing this as, like you said, this is a precursor to military bases. If you've got ports everywhere, if you're China and you're running this Belt and Road Initiative and you've got ports in India and Pakistan and Djibouti and Israel and all over the place, I mean, it stands to reason that you would know what was coming in and going out of those ports if you're the country that's running them. In this case, China is literally operating Pakistan's port. So
They were running the first Panama Canal up until recently. They ran the ports on Long Beach for the longest time. Again, this goes back to this is happening by design.
Right. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
We allowed this.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
I said on the Union of the Unwanted, this anaconda has been wrapping around us for years and years and years now, and now it's starting to squeeze. We're like, oh my God, I got an anaconda wrapped around me. You know what I mean? It's like we're kind of late to the game. We're playing catch a ball, and this isn't like a stereotypical statement, but believe, you know, what the China's doing, this is the same, you know, Sun Tzu, the art of war came from the Chinese. And one of the lines is a war is won before it's ever fought. So I think China has mapped this out for a very, very long time. And, you know, they picked a perfect time. Like you said, even though I think presidents are kind of symbolic to some degree, they wouldn't have been able to do this under Trump. Yeah. But they've taken the weakest dude who's soft like cake, and they're really exploiting that. So then, you know, I think Taiwan's next at some point. It almost has to be within the next 2 years in order to fully execute this larger plan. They do have to take Taiwan, not so much because they care about the physical autonomy of Taiwan, but Taiwan is really the foundation of the next several decades, if you will, is this technocracy that we all talk about. And the technocracy, the foundation of that is semiconductors and microprocessors. And in Taiwan, among other places, but in Taiwan specifically, there's this company called Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, which are creating the next level of semiconductors for all of our stuff, our tablets, our cars, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, I think, what Taiwan or what China really needs to lock down. I mean, that gets into like what we've done with Huawei. We don't mess with any countries who do business with Huawei. So we're kind of handicapping China's ability to grow and develop their technology sector. So they really need Taiwan for that. But I don't know, man. It's just crazy. Like, but again, going back to the Chinese, like a war is won before it's ever fought. These guys, I think it's just unprecedented, the level of expand of how they've grown literally without firing a shot. I know I've said that, but I mean, they're getting other people to fire a shot, yeah. Like what's going on in Sudan. They're getting those two to fight each other, Pakistan, all these different places, Myanmar, etc. But ultimately, they're just laying back in the cut and they're just swooping in, providing the solution to, I wouldn't say necessarily the problem they created, but they're definitely not letting a good crisis go to waste globally.
And learning from what was done to them 250 years ago with the opium wars. Yes. I mean, it seems like this is a payback. We've got fentanyl coming into America, doing God knows what to entire communities. We know where it's coming from. We know where it's being manufactured. It's being manufactured in, yes, China. It's being sent into America through the, well, you know, like the way any drug gets into America, through the easiest way possible and through a variety of different ways, all at the exact same time, just flooding the market, hoping that something will get through. And of course, you look at the southern border and you go, well, it's open for business. So we've got a covert opium war in reverse being foisted against us.
Exactly.
And much like you said, I mean, if you're talking about the art of war, you know, attack when your enemy is weak and also soften them up from the inside in advance of the attack, right? And that's what we're doing. I mean, if we look around, nobody can pass the entrance exam into the military anymore. Be it that their grades are low, they have a prison record, or they can't do enough pull-ups, right? So we've got that as a just cultural decay. Yuri Bezmenov talking about demoralization. You know, I just keep hearing Yuri was right in my head, and you've got
you can't underestimate that, Charlie. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but underestimate what Yuri Bezmenov said, the ideological subversion. We are such an ADD society. We don't get that these guys are playing steps and steps and decades ahead, but that's what ideological subversion is. This takes decades. And again, the best social engineering is taking place when you don't realize it's happening. And so I think that's why this anaconda, if you will, has been allowed to get around us, because it's not a kinetic threat that's obviously indiscernible right in front of you. This is a slow conditioning that, you know, you're the Bernays of the world, the ideological, not ideological, but the behavioral scientists and social engineers, they understand how to do it in a slow roll, because if you manifest a threat like immediately in front of somebody, they're more like, hey, I don't like that. But if you just do the boiling frog type agenda, like, it's easier to execute your plan, as we've seen.
Yeah, and we're just here sitting thinking we're in a jacuzzi as they're cranking up the heat on us, getting us from every direction. But again,
as long as my phone works, as long as my streaming services work, as long as my fridge is cold, my beer. I mean, it's, again, Pat and I talk about this because he gets really, and I do too. It's like, where's the clapback? Where's the people who are like, I'm not cool with this, but we're just too. That fighting spirit we used to have. I know there's some fighters out there, don't get me wrong, but we're just so soft now, and we're breeding more and more soft people. You know what I mean? It's not a good look for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And when we look back in retrospect to the, you know, from our greatest generation to even now, the people who are just really scratching their head, like, what the fuck is going on? Unfortunately, they're done with us, kind of the elder statesmen, if you will. I'm not old, but I'm older. But they're going after the young kids, where these guys are, as we've seen, soft as cake, dude.
Yeah, and it's got
some hardcore young cats. I'm sorry.
But again, it's Pat Miletich, UFC Hall of Famer. He knows the difference between being hard ass and being soft, and it's got to be extra frustrating for him, a guy that's trained his entire life and understands that you got to work.
And it shouldn't even be. Yeah, I mean, Pat is hard to steal, but I'm just saying what the legacy we're leaving our kids, man. You don't even have to be a Pat Miletich. Your Joe Schmo dad should be really pissed off about what's happening to our children and the legacy that our kids are about to inherit. Sorry, I keep interrupting. Yeah. I apologize.
It's okay. You and I are friends. It's like we're having beers with each other.
I get animated.
Well, listen, there's a lot to get animated about. I mean, this is frustrating. And the problem, I think, one of the problems for me is that there's it's flashing sirens, right, in light saying emergency, emergency. And guys like you and I are screaming about it. And yet you look around and the general public is totally apathetic. They don't care. They don't recognize this. And I start to wonder, like, wow, what a conditioning job has been done on these people. And it, you know, 20 years of television, 20 years of high fructose corn syrup, you know, an entire three generations of chemicals in the water, you know, fluoride in the water, a systematic dumbing down of society into this docile, malleable blob of human beings known as Americans. And it's really embarrassing because maybe it was all just marketing, but it always felt to me like the Americana ideal was that we were sort of tough. Like we stood up, you know, we didn't back down when things got, when things were at its most critical, the American people would jump up and spring into action and would snap together and work hard and do what needed to be done. Right. That's sort of the Americana image that's put out there. What are we now? Like, Jeffrey, what are we now? Like, what's the impression of us from around the world that we're 100 different genders and that we're it's tranny story time? Is that is that America now? Because if it is, I'm out.
Well, again, like, none of this is by accident. Yeah, but again, you know, back in the day, you know, we had leaders who were clapping back on your Hitlers of the world, but and even that was kind of a contrived situation. When I talk about organized crime, I mean, it's like there's so much of this stuff it seems like it's happening organically, whether it was like so many wars of the last 20th century where all the books were cooked, whether it was the sinking of the freaking Maine, World War One, the Bolshevik Revolution, World War Two, Gulf of Tonkin, JFK. There was always some shady shit behind it. Right. And so again, they're not clapping. Our leaders aren't clapping back, from our president to our joint chiefs to our military. And again, it's there's so much to this, but again, this is all the controlled demolition, bro. This is we've been almost bred anymore to just be more apathetic to the whole situation. I mean, America is right now, like you said, looking like we're not the strongest in the world anymore. And we don't necessarily have to be the world's policeman, but we're not projecting this kind of notion of don't mess with America anymore. Yeah. Everyone's looking at us like, are you kidding me? Biden, you're falling. And he's old, and it's really sad, actually. Outside of politics, looking at Biden, I'm like, damn, Grandpa, you need to be in bed. He's falling up and down the stairs going into Air Force One. He's all of it. And then the vice president's not sounding anymore, you know, cognizant. Charlie, because it's like, I think about you in your title of your book so much because it is so that. And it's when you tell people it's by design, like, oh, people can't keep a secret in a room with each other. How can they keep a secret on a huge conspiracy like this? And I hate that kind of like logic and rationalization or trying to dismiss this larger play that's going on. But we see it literally. It's real time playing out. The border, the banks collapsing, the move away from the dollar, all of it. It's literally happening in real time. So it's really mind-boggling, man. And I'm wondering what world our kids are going to inherit.
Man, I do too. And I stood on that stage at an Acapulco this year, and I said, get your money out of the banks, man. Get your money out. This was before Silicon Valley Bank or whatever. I just, you know, it's like at some point you have to take a look at the world, see what's going on, extrapolate out where things are headed and get honest about it, because our banking system, it seems like it's collapsing. I want to talk to you about another thing. Since we brought up Belt and Road and we talked about America's influence waning and how unusual that is and how potentially dangerous that is, there's another component that's growing as well. We talked about the countries behind the Belt and Road Initiative, but what about the countries behind BRICS? Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Now, this is a just a five-nation group that represents 40% of the world's population and 25% of the world's GDP. And they're taking on applications, right? They've got another seven different countries that are looking to join. There's a dozen nations after that that have expressed interest in working towards maybe getting becoming partners with them. And lately, they just announced something that would rightly get you invaded if you had done this 20 years ago, but they announced that they're working towards creating their own currency. I mean, is this the beginning of a multipolar world? Is the BRICS nation group, is this going to be the challenger, the challenger to the American empire, or even displace the American empire in our lifetime? Is that a reality, do you
think? I don't know if it's a displacement, but yes. And again, it's none of it's by accident. None of it's by accident. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, like you said, that's, yeah, it's just too huge to be something that's just happening just out of the blue. And I mean, this is definitely something, and this is something I talked to General Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, not so long ago, Pat and I did, and he wrote a book called The Citizen's Guide to Fifth Generational Warfare. Excuse me. Asymmetrical warfare, nonlinear warfare. And so we oftentimes look at things in the terms of nation state versus nation state, which makes sense because that's what they kind of almost like the cultural part. They create the groups and then play the groups off against each other. And that happens with nation state versus nation state. But I think this is still a larger context that it's all happening at the behest of what I like to call the IFCs, the international financial cartels. These are the same crews that have funded wars throughout history. Funded both sides, you know, whether it was the Bolshevik Revolution, Mao, etc. I think these financial powers and these old school bloodlines, you can get into who the hell that is still controlling stuff. And that gets into like your think tanks, your universities. All of this is at play here. They're all spokes on the same wheel, in my humble opinion. And it's all moving towards, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote in his grand chessboard, you know, how they focus so much on Eurasia and they don't want any power to come in and usurp and become any kind of dominant power in Eurasia. And that he wrote that book, I think, in the 70s. But now we're seeing that play out. We're seeing certain powers manifest and develop in Eurasia. And this goes, again, none of this is inorganic. This goes back to Kissinger when he, quote unquote, opened China with Nixon. And then you get into the Clintons and the transfer of technology. And dude, when I was in community college, my teacher at the time, God rest him, Dr. David Krein, brilliant, brilliant man. He told me, and I did graduate real college. I didn't just stay in community college, but he told me, look out for the Spratly Islands. I'm like, oh, wow, the Spratly Islands. And this was like the 90s, man. And so I went and looked at the Spratly Islands, like, oh, wow, it's a very geostrategic place where, like, you know, natural gas and oil, like billions and billions and billions of barrels are there. But this is the area where China started building these artificial bases. And this is where the expanse of their dominance in the South China Sea start popping off. And I also talk about on the show this organization in the South China Sea called ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. And it's a huge, huge block, kind of like the BRICS. So when China starts to implement its One Belt, One Road, the maritime side of it, they have to deal with these ASEAN nations, which they have. And again, the grand chessboard, the geopolitical stuff is shifting right in front of us because ASEAN, America has a lot of ties with different ASEAN nations, whether it's the Philippines, Malaysia, this and that. But China's starting to slowly move in because it's crucial for China to get through the South China Sea, through Indonesia, what's called the Sunda Strait, to get into the Indian Ocean up to Myanmar, where they're tricking off right now, Sri Lanka, and over to Africa. So a lot going on, man. A lot going on.
Yeah, and there is. And that region down there it's filled with gas. It's filled with a lot of people, that South Asia region, India, Bangladesh, Indonesia. There's more Muslims in Indonesia than there are in the Middle East, which I think throws
anywhere in the world, anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And you've got so clearly you've got different cultures trying to interact with each other. I wonder what the, a Malaysian Muslim or an Indonesian Muslim country interaction with a Chinese you know, top-down authoritarian regime looks like. I mean, can you be business partners? You're not going to be ideological partners, I would imagine, but can you put those differences aside and work out a little business arrangement, especially if this is
like you alluded to earlier, this is what China does. They set up symbiotic relationships where everybody benefits, as opposed to kind of the Western model of like coming in and scorched earth. I remember, it's better to win hearts and minds when you're trying to help people out, as opposed to like going in and just like leveling the place and then like maybe extracting their natural resources. At least China's doing it. And I'm not lamenting China or saying China's the move. I'm just saying they're doing it in a different way that more appeases the masses, as opposed to, you know, the other way of just like a full on scorched earth.
Yeah. Well, it's something I said about China's role in Africa as opposed to America's role in Africa. It's Chinese go into Africa and build hospitals for sick Africans, whereas America just builds graveyards for them. You know what I mean? We just drop bombs.
We'll bomb the hospital.
We'll bomb the hospital. If Obama has anything to say with it, we'll bomb the hospital, wait for the first responders to arrive, and then bomb it 30 minutes later. You know what I mean? The old double tap Obama. But that's America's legend. That's America's reputation around the world. And to see China step in and start to do things a little bit differently, it's interesting to watch, because I think that countries are growing more suspicious about America, America's influence. They understand the use of the dollar as a tool, as a weapon that can be used to club countries into submission. And it's very devious, but maybe the role and the reign of the dollar is coming to an end. We're going to have more with Jeffrey Wilson on the other side of this break. Stick with us. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
We had been hearing a lot about California Senator Dianne Feinstein and her absence from Washington. The 89-year-old Democrat was convalescing for 3 months, and there had been calls for her to step down. Why? Because Feinstein sits on the Judiciary Committee, and without her vote, Biden judicial nominees could not get voted out of that committee. Nominees like Shamil Belkingrin, questioned here in January by Republican Senator John Kennedy.
Judge, I'm far in. Tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
Do you know what purposivism is?
Very qualified, apparently. Good thing Diane is back. With Feinstein in attendance, the committee approved 6 of Biden's nominees on Thursday. Aren't we a lucky country? Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
The MAGA Institute is dedicated to helping create a more informed, more involved, and more active electorate by providing a unique combination of candidate vetting and certification with voter information resources, constitutional education, and volunteer training. Our secret sauce is our nationwide network of volunteers who help us learn which candidates truly are for We the People. Go to MAGAinstitute.com to join our candidate vetting volunteer network or to support our mission with your donation. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Charlie Robinson
on today's News Talk
TNT Radio.
Final segment with Jeffrey Wilson from The Conspiracy Farm and That Podcast Network. Jeffrey, before we get started, let's do this. Tell everybody where the best place is to find you and support your outstanding work that I have been enjoying for a very, very, very long time.
Much appreciated, Charlie. Like I said, That Podcast Network, you can find anywhere you find podcasts. We got, like I said, The Conspiracy Farm. We got my show, It's Me Speaking to You. We got former Raiders wide receiver Kenny Shedd has a show on there now. We got some other pretty big names. It's a slow drip, man. I'm just trying to build this thing. Got some pretty big names about ready to sign up for their show. But yeah, That Podcast Network, you can find that anywhere you find shows. And within that, you also find The Conspiracy Farm, as well as Me Speaking to You, etc. On The Conspiracy Farm, the best spot I would say is Twitter, at Conspiracy Farm 1. And any questions, comments, feedback, we definitely slide in those DMs and let us know what you think about the show. And it's your show, obviously, but I definitely want to hear your opinion on Elon's choice of CEO for Twitter.
That's what I was going to talk about. Let's talk about this. this is a catastrophe. Now, okay, so let me say this. From a advertising standpoint, I understand what he's doing. He's getting somebody that is responsible for brands for NBC Universal and has relationships with the biggest corporations out there that would potentially be sponsors of Twitter. And of course, we know that since Elon's takeover, that a lot of the sponsors that used to be on Twitter either left or have paused their sponsorship because they're, I don't know, because they think that it's just the KKK has taken over Twitter, or I don't know. They're reading some sort of they're reading false reports. They think it's it's all fascists and Donald Trump supporters. It's like, well, no, actually, it's really none of that going on over there. It's pretty much the same as it was before. So I understand that from the advertising standpoint, that you might want somebody that has those relationships, and that could make sense. But World Economic Forum, I mean, really, are you kidding me? It's a no for me, dog. Right? Like it's just an automatic disqualification when you're the World Economic Forum. Attention.
Yes. Yeah, it's insane. Like for Twitter now, you know, with Tucker Carlson now taking his show to Twitter, and now Twitter supposedly being this alternative platform for free speech and all this, he had this certain inertia and momentum going for him, even though, Elon Musk is a fucking Bond villain, the day is long. But then he throws in, I don't care what her background is, Comcast and branding and all of this shit. When you have, you're just that whole guilty by association. If you have an association to the WEF for anybody in this alternative world, it's like, I'm good. And it's almost, whatever, I'm not getting into that kind of conversation, but it's like you might have been Bud Light and put a trans on a Bud Light can, because his brand is definitely taking a hit because of his choice of who he chooses to help promote this. It's weird because it's like, it's almost like going to see, it's this kind of bait and switch, like you're paying to see your favorite band, and then Weird Al comes out and starts playing the band's hits. It's like, whoa, this isn't what I paid for, dude.
I didn't want Weird Al to be the one singing them, you know?
And it's just weird because, I have no problem with Joe Rogan and Elon, whatever. It's when Elon Musk was on Joe Rogan a few years ago, I was just blown away how casually Elon was like, no, this Neuralink, man, it's dope. It's like, if you can't walk, you get your limbs back. If you lost your memories because of Alzheimer's, you get your memory. It's like there's this weird way they sold this. And I'm just like, oh my God, I felt like I needed to take a shower after I saw the interview, because it was just like the way they were trying to make the Neuralink and ultimately the technocracy so palatable, because he's so cool, Elon's so cool, and he went on the coolest platform, Joe Rogan, to sell this insanity, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know. If you want a Neuralink, go get it. But it's like, he's a Bond villain, and his choice of CEO reaffirms that. And I'm wondering, everyone's out here buying their blue check marks and leaning into, now there's Twitter's offering this video kind of stream, not streaming, but you could do video on Twitter. It'll be interesting to see who turns away from it or who embraces it. Because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, they talk a good game, but, it's almost like I was talking to somebody about Cobalt, like Cobalt's being mined. We're all benefiting basically from child slavery through our laptops, our EVs, right. Our phones, right. Etc.
Every single one of us.
We don't
throw it away.
Yeah, we don't go back to the rotary phone. We don't do any of that shit. So it's like, I don't know. We're all kind of going along to get along here, and as I say, trying to stay sane in an insane world. But Elon is not your friend.
No, he's not your friend. Anybody that wants to put brain chips in you is not coming to you from a place of love. They're coming to you from a place of control. And the World Economic Forum is all about control. They're all about the fourth industrial revolution. They're quite literally about the fourth industrial revolution. Yes, that's what they say their plan is. And that is, and you go, well, what is the fourth industrial revolution? That sounds fun. And you go, well, it's the blending of man with machine into transhumanism. And you go, transhumanism? Oh, interesting. So like brain chips and helps me walk if my legs don't work? Well, yeah. Maybe, but also turns your brain off if they want you to. If they want to switch it off. This is transhumanism is the rebranding of eugenics, and eugenics is the thinning of the herd. Yes. So I don't know if they're talking about thinning the herd and they want to stick something in your brain. I don't know. Call me suspicious there, Jeffrey. I'm just not going to be the first person. Well, no, I'm not going to ever be in line for the brain chip.
And it reminds me of what they're trying to roll out with the CBDC. You know what I mean? This digital wallet, they can put money in, take it out. They determine how much you spend, you know, with the digitization of your medical records. Oh, wait a minute. You're diabetic. You cannot be buying whatever muffins or whatever the hell you're buying. It's like,
right. Yeah.
M&Ms. Yeah. It's a scary, scary thing. And again, and this is something, you know, Aldous Huxley, that brave new world we're moving into. Unfortunately, bro, as I said, the fighting spirit has gone out of most of us, and some of us are going to beg for our enslavement. Slavery by servitude, yeah. He said. We're going to love it. Don't take my phone. Don't take my streaming services. Don't take my TikTok.
Yeah.
Game set match, man. Unfortunately.
If the slaves get too uppity, then they'll spray us down with Soma, right? In Brave New World, they would spray you down, and then with this drug that would make you happy again. And of course, that drug today is television. They're just spray hosing you down with television. But man, I wonder.
The endorphins or the serotonin spike from likes and views and how many subscribers, like, you know, everyone's an influencer now. Everyone's trying, you know, it's, again, we're all in the same space, but I'm just saying, you know, I utilize this platform. I have fun with this and, you know, maybe they make a little money, but it doesn't dictate me or, you know, define my internal equanimity. But some people define themselves by, you know, the viewers and, you know, all that external bullshit.
Yeah, it's digital soma. You're right. Yeah, it's the endorphins, the likes, the views, the number of subscribers, the, you know, I'm doing these TikTok dances.
I paid for my check mark. I've got it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really fascinating that we're getting to a point where we're being taught to love our servitude. And we always read those books, man. I remember reading like 1984, God, a million years ago. And it's science fiction, right? It's like, oh, this will never happen. Or Brave New World. This will never happen. I just did an episode about the Huxley family. You know, you read Brave New World. It came out, 1932? You go, oh, this is a million years away. Well, really, you're about 90 years. That's all it was. It was about 90 years away. And we're walking right into Huxley's dystopian hellscape of Brave New World. I mean, it's a healthy 15-minute cities.
Yes, dude, but that's a healthy indicator of how long they roll this out, or how long they framework and play this, you know, this, they war game this out. You know, the Rise of the Machines, Terminator, like they've been telling us for a hot minute, you know, whether it's Philip K. Dick and Blade Runner or Future Shock or whatever, they've been telling us what's coming for a hot minute. And like you said, it's just science fiction. And then when you talk about it, it's like, oh, you've read too much, you watch too much X-Files, you watch too much whatever. But ultimately, this is kind of that part of that social engineering conditioning where what do they call it? The revelation of the method. They have to tell you before they do it.
Yeah. They've been telling us for a while. It's just that we've all got to get a little bit better at recognizing the signs. We got to go back, you know, you got to go back and look at these science fiction movies and start to understand that maybe the people that are writing them, the think tanks that are influencing them, the groups that they're part of, this is more like predictive programming as a means to ease you into this future, as opposed to going kicking and screaming. They'll have you begging for your AI robot to be your little servant, right? And not realizing that it's going to, you know, that in RoboCop, the robot, you know, just goes haywire and shoots everybody in the boardroom, right? I
mean, the Ed, just one Ed step 209, away from dude. That. The Ed 209. You're absolutely right. What is past is prologue. You were so correct, man. You were so correct in that.
We're gonna get Ed 209 pretty soon. But again, like we have nobody to blame but ourselves in this too. So it's like, on the one hand, absolutely, I have all this complaint. I have these complaints for the people out, the Elon Musks out there that are doing all these things. But listen, I got to save a portion of my frustration for we, the general public. Like this is really up to us. I mean, if we chose immediately to not participate in this, all this dystopian nonsense goes away. But our inability to stand up for ourselves, boy, it seems like it's been conditioned out of us over the last couple generations.
Well, because we see it play out, Charlie. It's like there's no, I use this kind of horrible analogy, but it's like the horror movie, the girl's running, oh my god, the police station, I run to the police station, I tap on the cop, he turns around, oh my god, he's a zombie too, shit, no one's here to save me. You got to save yourself. Because the threat, I mean, it's everywhere. It's we've allowed this to go on for so long. And like I said, you know, the fighting spirit's kind of out of a lot of us. I know there's still a lot of people with fighting spirit left, but, you know, you got mothers going to school board meetings. Hey, no, I don't want this happening to my kid. Oh, you're a domestic terrorist. Like, that's insane. Yep. On its face. To be deemed a domestic terrorist because you just have questions or want to, you know, have not want this with your kid. So it's crazy times, dude. It's crazy times. And I know we're running short on time. And I thank you so much for having me on, and appreciate it. And I'm so happy for you, man. You've been killing it for so many years. Go check out all of his books. No, I'm a big fan, man. It's cool to see people out here doing this stuff.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that. I think we're all on this journey. We're all trying to figure out how it works. And I think it's important for people to hear a variety of voices. If you like mine, great. Check out Macroaggressions. If you like Jeffrey Wilson's, go check out The Conspiracy Farm, that podcast network, everywhere where you can find and support Jeffrey in his work. We appreciate you, man. I'll catch you next time. Thank you. Second hour, Jeff Warnock after the break. This is TNT Radio.